Hi, my name is Bruce Perham. Welcome to my podcast series, Trauma from the Frontline. In this series, we'll be interviewing a wide range of people that work in the frontline industries who will be sharing their professional and personal thoughts and ideas about working in the field and some of the challenges that they all confront. Welcome to my podcast series, Trauma from the Frontline. Today we have Mia, who has come in to talk to us. Mia was a correction officer for 3 years, a bit more than 3 years, and left a couple of years ago and has been happy to come in and share her story. Can you just tell me, right from the beginning, you know, what made you think, oh, hang on, I might like to be a correction officer?
Well, yeah, it was a bit out of the blue why I got into it. While I was at uni, I was a vet nurse. So I worked at a small veterinary clinic in Glen Iris while I was studying an arts degree. And I ended up working there full time after I finished and stayed there for about 7 or 8 years. Absolutely loved it. And I sort of couldn't progress any further there. I mean, I sort of started running the practice and helping out as much as I could there, but it was only a small clinic, so there wasn't really anywhere to move or, yeah, as I said, progress. So I was thinking, what can I do going forward that involves animals, because I knew that was a passion of mine. So initially I thought perhaps police and getting to the dog squad. That was sort of my goal. I did try to get into there, but unfortunately that didn't work out. So I was sort of researching what other careers I could move into with animals. I knew I didn't want to be a vet, like a veterinarian, because science wasn't really my thing. And I am a very practical, hands-on type of person and need to be doing different things each day. And so I was just looking up, you know, what sort of things I could do, and I came upon correctional officers, prison officers, and I saw that there was a career path to move into the dog squad there. So I thought, perfect, this would be awesome, similar to police, I thought, and an option to go into the dog squad. So I thought, yep, I'm going to do it. So I applied, and that's sort of how it happened.
Can you tell me a bit about the training that you went through?
Yeah. So it's a bit of a blur, but I'm pretty sure it was for 8 weeks. So we did that out of the jail. So we went there every day and did our training syllabus, I guess you would call it. So basically we just did some theory side of things. It was pretty much all theory. And then I think we had 2 weeks practical where we went into the prisons towards the end of it and worked in every different area in most areas in the jail to get a feel for what it was like. I wouldn't say that it was very thorough training. I probably didn't really apply much of what I learnt from training into the jail. It was just completely different.
So, you're right. I was going to ask you that. So was it sort of like, and often training is, it's a bit of incongruent, you know, you do the training, but the actual reality is really different. Correct. What can you remember as being the main themes that came out of the training in terms of like prisoner management and
It is a real blur, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I think it was there was a focus on obviously rehabilitation side of things and trying to I guess communication with prisoners and that sort of thing. So there was a lot on that. There was a lot on like self-harm side of things and how to manage that. It was all just sort of theory based. It wasn't really what actually happens in there.
On, you know, your own emotional journey or potential issues of the work. I mean, occasionally I would come in and do presentations to the newer staff on, you know, managing trauma or and I often sort of sensed the eyes were glazed over and no one was listening.
Yeah.
You know, did you come out of it with a sense of, well, this work could have its challenges?
I think they did sort of, as you mentioned, like, you know, get people to come in and just have a bit of a chat to us, but it wasn't like talked about often. Right. I think it was probably just a couple of hour session, because what I do remember from it was they'd get different people from the prisons to come in and do a little speech to about sort of what that area they were talking about. So it might have been, for example, like counselling. They might have got a counsellor to come in.
Yes.
But yeah, it wasn't something that was really pushed. It was just probably a one-off kind of, yeah.
Yep. So day one, you've finished your training.
Yep.
And you're starting your first day at the prison.
Yeah. Yep.
What happened from then?
Well, you could say it was day one, but I guess we did sort of had the 2 weeks.
The couple of weeks.
Yeah, the couple of weeks where we were, in there. So I sort of did know what to expect. That was very traumatic for me, those 2 weeks that we were doing placement, because we weren't treated very nicely by
Tell me about that.
Other staff members. I think my biggest challenge that I faced while working in the prisons was the culture within the prison. The prisoners themselves was difficult, and there was a lot of trauma involved with that, but I think it was mainly the culture. So when we were put in for our placement, we were basically treated like the scum of the earth by the other officers. And when I say other, yeah, it wasn't everyone, but it was vast majority. I mean, there were really lovely people in there, so I don't want to generalize to everyone, but yeah.
So that would have taken you by surprise, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't have anticipated that.
Absolutely, yeah, because I came from the workplace where I came before, the small vet clinic. I was, you know, I was adored there. My bosses were just absolutely amazing and incredible people to work with. And then I've come into this prison environment where I've literally been sworn at and by other officers and, you know, told to stop asking questions and, you know, told that I'm stupid and made to feel like tiny. And I felt like they spoke to me worse than what they would speak to prisoners. And, yeah, so it was a lot of bullying.
Looking back now, which is, you know, what sense do you make of that? You've done the training, you've come in too early in your career,
yeah,
and to receive, you know, in a way it sounds like pretty aggressive belittling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what sense do you make? What was going on? You know, can
yeah,
you,
well, at that time I thought it must be me. Yeah, like, I'm not strong enough to be in this job. This is what the type of people are that are in this job. Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have done this. Like, yeah, I really took it personally and thought that it was me. But now on reflection, I realise that there is, and after working there for so many years, I understand why people end up being like that, because of what goes on there. And it's just a perpetual treatment of people. Like, that's how they treat new recruits. And then the new recruits end up becoming like that and then treat the new people that come in, and it's just a repetitive cycle. And it's just, now that I'm out of it, I look back on it and think how, like, screwed up that workplace was, like, and I couldn't, but when I was in it, it was like I couldn't see that properly.
Mm.
At the start I could, but then after I was in there for about a year, it just became the norm.
A lot of officers have mentioned to me that dilemma of almost like, do I go into that behaviour to survive or to be accepted, or do I stand up against it? And when I've chatted to officers that have kind of stood up against it, that's been traumatic in itself. I mean, did you have that dilemma of, well, okay, this is really sitting outside how I treat people, but it's my workplace? I don't know. Was that a dilemma?
Well, yeah, it was a massive dilemma. I couldn't believe people were speaking to me the way they were speaking to me. Like, I've never had anyone, not even my worst enemy, speak to me that way, that these fellow work colleagues were speaking to me, and I didn't know how to take it. And actually, sorry, I'm jumping around a bit. I know you asked me about my first day.
We can move on from that now.
Yeah, okay. But with the first day, like, I did witness a pretty traumatic incident where a prisoner was what we call slashing up, so cutting themselves. And it was a mixture of seeing that and then the treatment that I was received by the other officers that actually sent me into quite a bit of depression. And I ended up taking about 3 months off work after my – so I started my first week and I just couldn't do it. And so I fell into a heap. And I couldn't get out of bed, and because I was taking it all like so personally on myself, and I completely fell in a heap, and I had to take about 3 months off work. I went on antidepressants, so I was in a really bad place.
Are you able to, because you've raised a couple of major issues there, that the witnessing your first slasher, and then dealing with that, not then supported? Was that what occurred,
support.
That you weren't supported by those around you?
No.
What was conveyed to you after that, witnessing, you know, your first slash up, which, you know, as we kind of chatted about before, you've got no real idea if you've never worked in that field before. What did the officers around you do?
So I think it was a mixture of obviously witnessing my first slash up was very traumatic, but knowing that I didn't have support of my fellow colleagues because that's how I was being treated, with sort of the bullying nature of the culture, and then witnessing that, I couldn't cope.
What did people say to you, you know, like after that, when, you know, and I know officers are often in shock.
Yeah.
After, what was said to you?
All that was said to me was, oh, it wasn't that bad.
So they suck it up.
Yeah. So what happened, just quickly, of the story of what happened, I was working a morning shift and we were opening up the jail, and you do count at the start of the day to count all the prisoners and make sure they're all alive and however many there are. And I got to, I think it was like the fourth cell, and I looked in and there was a guy there and he had his pants down and he had I don't know what it was, but some sort of sharp object, and he was just slashing his legs and he just had blood coming all down his legs, and I just froze. Like, I've never seen anything like that in my life at this point. And I my heart stopped, and then it sort of switched into what I needed to do. So I yelled out to my senior, who came down and had a look in the window and was trying to tell him to stop. And then I asked him, do I call a code, which is when, all the staff come down to help, and he said yes. So I called the code over the radio. Everyone came down, and my senior just turned to me and said, can you continue with the count, please? And so then I was like absolutely shocked, and just thought, okay, well, I've got to continue counting these prisoners. So I continued my job of counting, going through all the cells, and all that was going through my head was that, seeing that guy doing that, and I couldn't count properly. I couldn't even count how many people I was seeing. Like, my mind couldn't compute it. And then I got to the end and he goes, oh, how many prisoners are here? And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know. And he's like, you just did count. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it, kind of thing. And then I think somebody else took over and did count, and I just was so shocked. Like, I just, but I had to keep working. And then that's when a comment, because everyone obviously rushed in when the code was called and saw the prisoner, and someone turned to me. No one asked me if I was okay or anything like that. There was none of that. It was just, oh, it wasn't that bad. Like,
So nobody tuned in that maybe that could be your new first time you've experienced something like that. No one put their arm around you or said, you know, you're okay? Or when it got to, was there a debrief? Was there
no debrief?
So there was no debrief after that?
No.
And so no one talked to you, and you just ended the shift and...
Yeah. I mean, I spoke to my fellow squad members who had just come into the new role as well about it, and obviously they were supportive.
Yes.
And I had one lady who was actually my squad manager, who was very supportive, and I talked to her about it, but she wasn't assigned the job of ensuring I was okay. It was just, she was such a nice person that I could go to her.
Yes. So there again, you know, making sense of it, that none of the officers could tune in to that in terms of you being new. I mean, what sense did you make of that? Are they all just, I don't know what, you know? When you went home, you know, was it just sort of like, what's happened?
Yeah, it was more of a, okay, well, obviously there's much worse than this. I do need to suck it up.
Yeah, so
like, this is nothing. If I can't handle this, I'm weak.
So then that's that turning it back on yourself.
Myself,
and that's pretty alive and well in the culture, isn't it? That's sort of, well, the tough just deal with it, the weak don't. So tell me what happened that night, you know, that coming down from that, is that when you started to feel like, my God, you know?
Yeah, I think that's when the inner turmoil started getting louder, and it was those negative voices in my head saying that, yeah, obviously, like, why am I so weak? Why can't I handle this? Like, this is what your job is. Like, you know, everyone else deals with it. Why can't you? Why are you so emotional about it? Yeah.
When you look at, sorry, I'll ask you a lot of look back questions, but because I often, you know, so do officers. Well, even what you've described to me, that's full on. Mm. You know, it's a full on situation when you haven't had any background experience of it. It's your first encounter of that sort of thing that someone like me would almost expect, well, yeah, you're going to be, you know, shocked at that, or you're going to be distressed by that. And it's been a challenge for me to come to terms with, but the environment often doesn't allow that.
Mm.
When did you start to feel, hang on, this is more to this than I'm weak?
It took a while. I would say probably 8 months to realise that it's not me. There is more to this. And that was after I had a really bad period where, as I mentioned, I had to take months off, and I think going on my antidepressants helped. But I don't know what the turning point was that made me realise that it's not actually me. I can't pinpoint a specific incident.
Right. So obviously they were dark days, that 3 months when you were off.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously dealing with the depression. How were you able to get back? You know, how did you get back to work?
Well, I think the antidepressants definitely helped me.
Right, just to that stabilise you.
Yeah, stabilised me and got me back on track. And it was just my own. I'm a very determined person, and I didn't want to give up.
Yes.
I wanted to prove to myself I could do this. And I came back sort of a couple of days a week, because what happened was actually HR kept calling me saying, why, like, are you coming to work? And I'd say, no, I've got a doctor's certificate. I'm going to be off again next week. And it was just sort of like that. And after a couple of months, I remember HR called me and said, what is going on? You've just started and you keep taking time off. Like, what is going on? And I told them that I was quite depressed and, I couldn't get out of bed. And the response was just, oh, yeah, that happens to quite a few people here. No support or anything like that.
Yeah. Was that a lack of understanding? I mean, do you think that the people that you were dealing with just really didn't understand what you were going through?
Yeah. And I think because there was no sort of checking in, like with new officers when they come into the role, there's no one to come and check, like, how your week's been, like, what's been happening. Like, no one checks on you. It's just you're in there and you have to see these things happening, and it's just deal with it yourself kind of thing. So, after I sort of started feeling better on antidepressants and I want to come back, I said to HR that I would come back a couple of days a week, and that's where I felt like I was a bit stronger, in the sense that I was like, this job is, these people that work here are not what I'm like, and I just sort of, I think, dissociated it and like separated myself, and just I kind of became sort of two people when I was at work and then when I wasn't at work, and that was my coping mechanism. And I found some people within the workplace that I really got along with, and I just sort of tried to stick to them.
Must have been confusing.
Yeah, it's confusing for me even thinking back how I sort of got through it, because it was, horrible.
In the return to work, was there any sort of understanding of what you were returning to work from?
No.
So it was sort of more of a, well, can you up it a day? Or
yeah.
So there was no recognition of what you'd been through?
No.
That must have been challenging.
Yeah. I think, like, yeah, my family didn't want me to sort of go back, and friends, because they could see the change in me, didn't want to.
Well, and also how quickly. It's not like you'd been in the job for 3 or 4 years and then you know, which is common, you then go through a rough trot. You'd only just started, and that connection of how it started, not really feeling supported, not having a mentor. So obviously the resilience in you, and I get really understand that, that no, I've got to go back. Mm. I have to face this. Mm. But was that sort of like that, as you said, almost the two people, you know, I have to function in that environment.
Yeah.
So as your career went on, you know, what other sorts of things occurred? And
yeah, I think now that we've sort of mentioned that, I feel like I did come back and I completely sort of changed. Yeah, I was a different person in when I was at work, and I became, I felt like I said to myself, you have to be tough now, like you have to have that characteristic that every other officer has, which is just, yeah, suck it up and just, and I became quite aggressive, which I'm not an aggressive person, but I became really aggressive. And I think over the course of my career there, that was my coping mechanism, just to be aggressive. I mean, there's so many incidences that I saw during that time of people slashing up and just men flipping. Like, I've never seen somebody get so angry as I've seen with people in there. There's this one thing that comes to my mind, incident that comes to my mind now that we're sort of talking about further in my career, where I was asked to help move a prisoner from one cell to another. And he was really nice to me at the time and, you know, there were no issues. So I escorted him to this cell and he said to me, "Oh, miss, I've left my belongings in my other cell. Can I go and get them?" And I said, "Oh, no worries, I'll go get them for you," because I'd already moved him into his new cell. And he just did not want to. And he went from a nice, friendly prisoner to like enraged in about 30 seconds. And I said, no, I'll go get them. Like, you know, no issues. It's fine. Just stay there. He ended up screaming at me to the point where he just went ballistic. He broke a toilet. Like, I don't even know how he did this, but he broke the toilet. And he got a bit of the broken toilet and started slashing himself in front of me, screaming at me that he was going to fucking kill me and he's going to come find me and fucking kill me. And he was slashing his arms and just going ballistic. And this was in the space of, as I said, like 30 seconds. And I didn't realize somebody could go from this extreme to that extreme so quickly. And it just made me realize how dangerous, like, this workplace actually is, and the only way that I could cope with that was to be aggressive back. At the time I wasn't to him, but in general, like if a prisoner spoke to me the wrong way, I had to show them that I was strong enough to deal with it, and I would get really aggressive back and tell them to get in their cell and sort of show my authority over them, because that was the only way that I could cope, because being nice didn't work. Like, being nice, I was just squashed, so I felt like I couldn't do that. Yeah,
that with that episode with the prisoner, where you know clearly you would have been thinking there's some degree of danger here.
Yeah.
What sort of support did you get? More support around that, or because clearly you were at some degree of risk?
Yeah.
In that sort of situation, I mean, were the officers around you more supportive of that event than the original one, or was it still a, well, that's what we deal with? And
yeah, it's sort of just a, like, at that stage I had, you know, quite a few mates I was working with now. Like, I'd sort of become in, I guess, right. in
You had a network.
Yeah, I had a network at that point. So I did have people say, "Oh, are you okay?" But that's the extent of it. It doesn't go any further and you're still expected to continue on your shift. Like, it's just at the time, "Are you okay? You're all good," like, kind of thing, and then press on. Like, there's no there's no sit down debrief about it. Like, there's no time for that.
So there's the expectation that you'll be good.
Yeah.
You'll be right. If you're on top of it, officer, you'll be good to go. A couple of things. With that level of violence directed at himself, but also verbally directing it at you, was that the moment where you thought, well, this job is actually dangerous?
That was the moment where I was, yeah.
Yeah. So I would imagine that must have been challenging. You go home that day to think, well, I've just seen a whole nother aspect of what I deal with in this work? Was that really challenging to think I am actually at risk here?
Yeah, it was. And I think I would get scared. I think that just showed me that these guys do not care, because when I first started, I kind of had this mindset that prisoners, there's sort of a culture within the prisoners that they don't hurt women. And I felt like I was sort of a little bit safer than a lot of my male colleagues because I was a woman. And to be fair, most of the prisoners are quite respectful to women officers. So I sort of always felt like I was kind of safe, and no one would touch me because there was that culture, because most of the prisoners, if any prisoner hurt a female officer, the other prisoners would really, go at them. So I was kind of felt safe. But when that incident happened, I realised that I'm not safe, that these guys, you can't predict what's going to happen, and there is potential that I will get injured, hurt.
Mm.
Sometimes I would have dreams that I would be killed by these prisoners. So, it made me realise that I wasn't safe.
So going back to work after that experience, how was that?
It was really hard. I think I was always on edge. It was always just that bit. I was scared, but I didn't want to show that I was scared.
Show that.
Yeah.
And did that sort of up the aggression in a way?
Yeah.
Because I can really understand just from talking to you today that aggression would not be your first reaction to something.
Yeah.
I mean, was that where you started to go, hang on a minute, what am I turning into?
Yeah.
Or I'm needing to use aggression to deal with emotional situations? I don't know. How did that work?
I'm not sure. Two things come to my mind when we're talking about that. And there was this one incident where I got scared. And again, as I said, I shouldn't, I told myself that I can't show that I'm fearful. And I was working in a specific area of the jail in the reception where the new prisoners come in. And there was an incident where a prisoner started playing up and another officer took him to the ground, and I got scared in that incident because I was fearful of what, because I know what these guys can do because of, that what happened earlier, and I freaked out. And so I pressed my duress button, which is calls a code, just as a natural reaction. I just pressed it, and the officer that had taken the prisoner to the ground turned around and yelled, "Who pressed their duress? Who fucking pressed their duress?" And I froze, because it was me, and he was so angry that I'd pressed my duress. And the reason why he was angry was because when your duress gets called, a code goes off, a siren sounds, everyone runs to the area where the code has been called, and the cameras are on. And he and I didn't know how to react, but I know that if you don't own your stuff in this culture, then you're going to be targeted even more. So I just turned around and said, I pressed it. And he screamed at me and basically told me, his words were, "We cut our own fucking snakes down here. Don't you ever fucking do that again." And from there, it sort of, I was targeted by that group of officers that worked down there. They hated me after that. And it just showed me that when I get scared, I can't, calling a code shows that you're weak. So then from there, I just felt like I had to take the responsibility of dealing with situations instead of reaching out, because reaching out just
ostracized you from everybody else.
Yeah.
What was the current of that? Was that because they didn't want the cameras on?
They didn't want the cameras on because they wanted to, because that prisoner, he had nudged an officer or done something, and then the officer had taken him to the ground. To be fair, he didn't probably need to do that at all, where there's a lot of that goes on. But Yeah, he didn't want the cameras to, because if I hadn't called a code, none of the footage would have been reviewed and he could have done sort of what he liked to the prisoner. Okay. Yeah.
So that day when you went home from work.
Yeah.
Because in a way you've reacted instinctually because of the danger of the situation.
Our training, our training for those 8 weeks said if there's any incidences, you press your duress. Yeah. Well, that's what we were taught.
Well, and it could have gone the other way in that you don't press the duress and that officer gets injured and then everyone's going, well, why didn't you press the duress?
But they wouldn't have got injured because these blokes are, you know, big burly guys that cut their own snakes.
But you never know, you know, it could go pear-shaped and then suddenly you haven't pressed the duress.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that would have been confusing as well.
You'd was.
I'm thinking, well, okay, I now have to deny my instincts of calling a code because the unit doesn't want codes called.
Yeah, so that's where the aggression became...
You've got to be tough.
I've got to be tough.
And look, and I'll probably say disconnected. Mm. You know, I can't see this as emotion. I've got to see this as. So when, there's another question. When you went back after that, I mean, was it starting to wear you down? All of these challenges of what you had to deal with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And being ostracized. I mean, how hard was that?
Yeah. Oh, that was horrible. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyone understood that? I guess your graduate colleagues would, because they'd all be experiencing a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, but no one really talked about it because it happens so frequently that it's just part of it. No one.
So you end up being on your own.
Yeah. And that's a worse place to be.
Yeah.
Especially in working in a prison, to be feeling so isolated.
You still kept getting up and going in.
Yeah.
How were you managing to do it?
I honestly, I don't know. I just became a different person. I don't know how I was doing it. It was wearing me down though.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you were becoming more and more separated.
Mm.
Officers often talk to me about that this changes you or, you know, that you end up being a different person. Did you start to feel, hang on, I'm not just a little bit different. I'm starting to become majorly different.
Yeah.
I don't know. What?
I noticed that when I was not working, I was swearing all the time. Constantly swearing, and I didn't care either. Like, you know, now if I swear around someone, I'm conscious that, oh, you know, I don't want to be rude or anything like that.
Yes.
But I just did not give a shit. Like, when I was out of work, I spoke to people however I wanted to because I thought, I don't care. You don't know what I'm going through sort of on a daily basis. Like, me being rude to you, I really couldn't care less. Like, I just was, yeah, I really was a different person.
That would have been overwhelming, I would think. Of just it, is it sort of that you experience so much during the day that, and often officers tell me that, and then after I just can't process anything else. I just can't. It's almost like what you're seeing is so off the scale.
Yeah,
and experiencing not just what you're seeing, that it's almost like I can't be me anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, was it just is, that sort of like it's like you're stuck in this world, like, and the real world doesn't really exist anymore in a weird way.
Yeah. So is that you can't get the jail out of your head?
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's there all the time. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the dreaming you're going to be killed.
The dreaming was bad. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mia, I'm interested to know at what point did, you know, because we've talked about how it was sort of in a way it was just wearing you down, you know, the anger, the not feeling yourself. At what point did you decide, I can't do this anymore, I need to get out?
Well, there was probably many points across the time I was there, but I didn't sort of act on that until there was an incident where one of my work colleagues took his own life, and that was definitely the tipping point for me that I knew I needed to get out of this workplace. Yeah.
And was that in relation to like the workplace stress, or, you know, do you think that his trauma, whatever we want to call it, was a factor of that he felt he needed to take his own life?
Yeah, I probably can't talk to it too much because it's his story, but I know that he was experiencing some significant like workplace issues that probably weren't addressed. And, yeah, I know he was having a really hard time with work, and I feel like, yeah, work was sort of consuming him. So,
did he ever talk to you about what he was going through, or
not specifically, but I think a lot of us were sort of aware of what was happening at the time for him.
Did you know, have a sense of how depressed he was?
No, I didn't realize. And I think it was after his passing, it was sort of just never spoken about again. Yeah.
So how what impact did that have on you personally to have a colleague that you were close to?
Yeah.
Because I guess that's the when someone takes their own life, there's just tragedy whichever way. Yeah. You know, how did you kind of manage that?
Sorry, I always get emotional when I talk about this. I think about it still like every day. Well, not every day, but a lot. I think about it a lot. Yeah. And it's one of those things I can't make sense of it either. Like, yeah, I just don't understand how. I don't understand how, like, you know, I wasn't that close to him, but it affects me still so deeply. I don't understand how other people continue to work in this workplace. And it hasn't, well, it must have affected other people, but it just doesn't seem like everyone else seems fine. Yeah. I guess it's probably because no one ever talks about it that I feel that way. I was just wondering,
is that a part that the, it's almost like the line between work and personal has got blurred?
Yeah.
We just deal with it in the way like it was a prisoner? I don't know. Is it sort of like
it must be. We just, you know, these things happen. Yeah.
We just move on and that's how he did what he did. And
yeah, and it really hit me so deeply that I couldn't just accept that, and I think that's why I had to leave. Whereas, you know, there's so many other people that still are working there to this day and just accepted that that's what's happened. And surely they can't, surely deep down you can't just accept that. Like, it, you know, yeah, I'm not sure.
Is it possibly also a reflection a bit of your own sensitivity and as we've chatted, you know, your love of people and you know, that caring gene that was just more, well, what's the word, you know, available to you, that you can't deal with it in that way, that you deal with it in a personal way, that was a close friend of yours, its life is over. I go in and out of situations all the time where someone has suicided, and even as a professional, I'm always touched. You know, I don't know the people. Always touched by that's a life that's gone. And I just wonder whether that's something that for you was the last straw, because this isn't a work, this is a colleague, this is a friend.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, and I think you're exactly right there. Like every prisoner suicide that, you know, I was privy to or during my time working there affected me, even if I didn't know the prisoner specifically. But when it was your work colleague that you knew this person and you cared for this person, and to think that he's no longer here anymore because he's taken his own life because he was suffering that much, it kills me to think that, you know, I could I have done more or noticed something, helped him somehow. Like, that kills me to think that. Like, I don't understand how some of his friends or, you know, still can work in that workplace. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, it's always a little bit like, well, it always happens to someone else, you know.
Yeah.
Or it's not going to happen to me, you know, and I think you know, when you talk to her about, well, there's a high risk of these occupations of having PTSD. Oh, well, that's always other people. You know, yeah. Won't happen to me. I think that's alive and well. Mm. Well, I know that. You know, police get PTSD, police officers get PTSD, but I don't need to worry about that because I'm not going to get it.
Mm.
Rather than, well, maybe I will. I don't know whether it's just that kind of, if I process what's happened, well, then it might challenge me, so I just don't. You know, because it's, as we sort of chatted, it is that flick it away, and it's just interesting, not interesting, but that's, you know, it's clearly a different experience because you learn, well, you got to deal with the prisoners, you got to deal with what they do to themselves, you got to, you know,
yeah.
You've got all that sort of structure that isn't necessarily healthy, but with something like a friend or a colleague, that's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
And yet what you're feeling is that they've sort of just dealt with it in the same way, or but look, you know, in a way, it's a reflection on yourself that you've been able to see him as the friend that he was, and the loss as the loss that it was, and yeah.
I just think me leaving there, the main reason why that made me leave is because if just personally for myself, if I stayed, if I continued to work there, I felt as though I was condoning the culture. I was condoning what happens in the system. And so me stepping away was me trying to respect in a way that, you know, I don't condone what happened here. Yeah.
You know, I can only reflect, you know, the importance of standing by your values.
Yeah. I think
to be able to go, no, okay, you know, time to move on. The sadness for me is that the system needs officers like you desperately, and yet they're losing them. For the reasons that we've talked about, and for other reasons as well. And you know, there again, that's not looked at.
Mm.
You know, no one really clearly tells you the figures of how many grads are gone in the first 2 years, or why are they gone? Did anyone ask you why you were leaving?
No.
They just took your resignation.
Couldn't care less, yeah.
Did anybody say thanks?
No.
I'm trying to think of a nice happy note to end on, but
that's all right. The happy note is that I'm not there anymore. We'll get Martin to
crack a joke. Look, you know, we got a long way to go, and there was a wonderful fellow that worked in the department that in 2016 funded, I won't say his name, but he funded the training I did back in 2016. And I've lost contact with him now. I'd desperately love to find where he is, but I don't know where he is. And he had PTSD, not from the system here, but from overseas. And I talked to him about that. Was before I wrote Code Blue, and I talked to him about that was what I was thinking. And he said to me, you know, it's a mountain to climb, but it's a climb worth taking. And I get emotional when I, you know, think of him saying that. And, you know, and I guess that's our mantra really, isn't it? It is a mountain to climb, but it's time we climbed it, you know. It's just time that we started to listen to what people are saying. And that's all I say is just listen to what people are saying, understand the story, and then work out what you're going to do. Don't work out what you're going to do before you hear the story.
Yeah.
So I can't thank you enough for sharing your story, and I'm going to invite you back again because there's so many more things we could talk about. Will you come back again?
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much, Mia.
Thanks, Bruce.
We'll talk to you again.
All right, thank
you. Good on you then. Bye. Thank you for joining me on this latest episode of Trauma from the Frontline. If you are enjoying this series, please make sure you follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you find this information valuable, we ask that you rate the show 5 stars. If you would like to get in touch with me, please feel free to email me at bruce@letstalkdifferently.com.au. Until the next episode, please take care. If this episode has raised any issues for you, free counselling is available through your organisation's employee assistance provider, Lifeline on 131 114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Today my guest is Greg Moore.